Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is returning VIP, Lieutenant Colonel Sean Myers. Hi, Sean.
At ease, Kelly.
I think you say that every time, and I don't have a response. You would think that 4 years in, I would come up with a response by now, but we're just going to have to see if I can come up with something next year. But anyway, thank you so much for coming back for season four of MASHcast.
You're welcome. Very happy to be here.
I'm very happy to have you here, as always. So we're here to talk about, of course, season four, episode eight, The Kids. It originally aired on October 31st, 1975, Halloween. And, of course, Sean, you've been on the show a bunch of times before, so we don't have to get into your history with the series. We can jump right to the episode. It was written by Jim Fritzell and Everett Greenbaum and directed by Alan Alda. After a long session in OR, the 477th gets news that massive shelling is threatening the makeshift hospital run by nurse Meg Cratty. Potter offers the 477th to her and her orphans for the time being. Meg Cratty, played by Ann Doran, and the kids arrive, and everyone is gentle and kind to them except for Frank, who considers the kids all foreigners and little more than thieves. Some of the kids bunk in the swamp, some in Colonel Potter's tent, who puts them asleep by reading them an army manual about how to field strip a rifle, some with Margaret, some in the officers' club. One thinks Klinger is a woman and keeps calling him Mamasa. One of Cratty's charges, a pregnant teen girl, stopped along the way to visit some relatives. She later staggers onto the compound, wounded. As she collapses onto the ground, radar calls for help. Both girl and baby are in jeopardy, and BJ takes the case, with Hawkeye and Potter taking on other patients as wounded start to arrive. Frank, for his part, is wandering around the camp, complaining about all these foreigners do is steal. Radar tries to remind him they steal because they're dirt poor, but it barely registers through Frank's thick head. BJ gets the girl stable and then delivers the baby safely, though it arrives with a tiny nick in its butt from the bullet. Later that night, Colonel Potter bestows on the baby a Purple Heart donated by Hawkeye and BJ. Margaret wonders sarcastically where they got it from, but you could see she's okay with the fact that Hawkeye and BJ have taken it from Frank. The next day, the shelling is stopped, and Nurse Cratty and the kids leave to head back home. So, okay, Sean, before we get to this particular episode, I just want to ask you, what are your thoughts about season four in general?
It's the greatest season of MASH in history, is what you say.
That's right, yes.
I do love it. It's a great season. My favorite character definitely is BJ. But, you know, the more and more I watch MASH, like, I am just so in awe of Larry Linville. Like, He is a fantastic actor. And it's just such a shame that that character of Frank couldn't, like, make the transition into being, like, more fully fleshed out instead of just like a cartoon foil. So definitely, like, I do like the Winchester years. Probably my favorite is when it's BJ and Radar and Winchester, like that era. So I like that. However, season four is just stellar. Like, it's just so wonderful.
Yeah. Like I said, every episode, I think this season is great, and a lot of them in their own different ways. We're already eight episodes into season four, but we really haven't had that many opportunities to do a episode with the whole cast. Because of course, Margaret, Loretta Swit was absent for a bunch of them. And then the first couple of episodes, we were introducing the characters. And then you've even got the one we just talked about previously, Dear Mildred, even though it's shown out of order, that one is still sort of introducing Colonel Potter to the group. So other than Hey Doc, where everyone is involved, we haven't really had the chance to have just a sort of quote unquote regular episode of MASH with the new characters mixed into the old characters and sort of putting them through their paces. So this is still a relatively novel concept. It's just everybody involved in the story. And it's the kind of episode, I mean, I like all episodes of MASH, but I tend to like the ones where it's one story through the whole episode, as opposed to those A and B plots that they would do in later seasons where it was very bifurcated. It was like, you know, the jokey plot, the serious plot. this is all just one story. It's everybody involved. The kids have arrived at camp, and that, of course, throws everything into chaos because all of a sudden you've got these children at the 477th and you've got to tend to wounded. So I like that it feels kind of movie-ish, for lack of a better term, is that it's one plot throughout the whole thing. And I think it's a very, very charming episode. So one of the things I want to mention right off the top before I forget this is I love in the opening where it's right after surgery and everyone is sort of relaxing. We see that the nurses are being handed coffee. There's this really nice moment where Hawkeye grabs the hand of one of the nurses and kisses her fingers and just goes golden, golden. And she smiles appreciatingly and walks off. I love that moment. I love that Hawkeye, we see that he takes the time to compliment one of the nurses when they do a particularly great job. And I want to make sure that that nurse gets credited. Now, she's not mentioned in this episode because she doesn't get a line, but that actress is Joanne Thompson. She would later go on to appear in, I think, like 11 different MASHes over the course of seasons like 8, 9, 10, 11. There she got lines. She doesn't get any lines here, and so she's not credited. But I wanted to make sure she gets a shout-out because I like that they have that moment. And I like that it's not – at this point, we really only know Margaret and a little bit of Nurse Kelly. But I like that it's – you know, of course, Hawkeye has relationships with the other nurses too. And I just think that's a really sweet way to open the show. Even though he's exhausted, he sits right down and he starts falling asleep. They mentioned that they've been in the surgery for 17 straight hours. I just think it's a really charming way to start the show.
Well, and it shows the affection and camaraderie of working together with people.
Yep.
And showing your appreciation for them.
Yeah, I think it's great. So then Colonel Potter talks to Nurse Kelly and he talks about, I want an hourly report over this patient, that patient. And then Radar comes in and we get our plot kicked off where he says, there's a message from Nurse Craddy. And of course, BJ doesn't know what a Nurse Craddy is. And we find out that that's Meg Craddy. And of course, we've met Meg Craddy in a previous episode. She was introduced in the season 2 episode, The Trial of Henry Blake, talking about that she runs basically an orphanage for wounded and orphaned Korean kids. And immediately, of course, Frank goes on about, oh, you know, last time they were come here, they steal. And I love Potter immediately steps in and he just says, Burns, shut your face. I love that. It's like, he doesn't have time for this nonsense. I just think that's, I don't know. I never want to besmirch the late, great Henry Blake. But I prefer this scenario more, that we have a stronger hand at the tiller in terms of the 477, that when Burns starts saying nonsense like that, you've got a commander who's just knock it off, Burns, and they move on to the next thing. I think that's great.
And I know that, like, technically this is the 8th episode, so theoretically this would have been 2 months of Potter and BJ. But like in the MASH-iverse, this would probably be much closer to when he first came in. Mm-hmm. And already he's shutting Frank down. Like he knows what Frank is like. He doesn't have time for that.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great. And so after that, Potter says, "All right, Major Houlihan, we're going to get organize a detail to get supplies." And I mentioned this episode was directed by Alan Alda. There's a very nice and relatively mm-hmm. for MASH sophisticated mm-hmm. tracking shot, which starts in the scrub room. We see that it basically picks up where the last scene ends off. And Margaret, as she's coming through, giving orders to everybody, she takes complete command of. And it's a pretty ambitious shot because as the camera pans back, we see various corpsmen walking back and forth. We see Klinger in a dress. There's somebody attending to one of the lights in OR. We see Igor. We see Goldman. I think we see Joanne, the nurse. And the walk continues all the way into the sort of pre-op room and follows. And the camera is all just one shot. And again, MASH, it was generally not TV itself is generally not a director's medium. But I thought the little piece of ambitious filmmaking on Alan Alda's part to do that relatively complicated tracking shot.
I love that. I have that in my notes that I wanted to talk about that. And the great thing about that is, like, you don't realize what's happening until it's underway.
Yep.
You know, the scene starts and then they start to move and move and move. And you're like, oh, wait. The camera didn't break. We're still seeing it's moving. I'm sure Aaron Sorkin must have been watching this and cribbed all of his directorial style from this shot.
Absolutely. Yeah. The walk and talk. It's a thing. It's a TV staple now. But when you see it in 1975, it's still like, wow, that's, again, it's pretty ambitious. So Frank pulls her aside for a moment and they take the time for a dirty joke where Frank says, I want to show you something. And she goes, not here. And you're like, what? Okay. All right. And then he reveals that he got a Purple Heart. By the way, this is Frank's second Purple Heart. He got a Purple Heart in the Sometimes You Hear the Bullet episode. Again, just as fake reasons. Margaret, I'm a little shocked that Margaret mm-hmm. falls for this, where mm-hmm. he's like, I was wounded. And she says, you never told me. And he goes, well, you know, when have I ever asked for sympathy, which is all the time Frank asks for sympathy. So I guess that Margaret just likes the idea that Frank is brave. She wants her man to be brave. And she's so caught up in it that she doesn't really think about it. And it's like, when the hell did he ever get wounded? Come on.
One thing I want to say is I just think it's a pathetic excuse of a putrid, petty, idiotic human who would ever say they always wanted a Purple Heart.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to get a Purple Heart.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's, you're missing the point of that. You're not you're supposed exactly. to do that, for God's sake. So, yeah, it's just like, ugh, Frank. Frank is at his worst in this episode for the bulk of it. And we'll get through that. But boy, there's some rough stuff here.
And I want to jump ahead just a little bit only sure. because it's related and I'm sure you'll get to it. But the fact that BJ calls him out on it so fast and so early in BJ's tenure there, like, that just makes me love BJ all the more.
Yeah. He immediately finds like, that's a Purple Heart. I mean, he's like, what the hell is that about? Yeah, he does call on him immediately. And so in the swamp, we see Hawkeye and BJ getting the place ready for the kids. And pre-internet or pre-having this stuff available on video, I don't know what was wrong with me, but for some reason, when Hawkeye is making the bed and BJ compliments him and he says, you know, if you hadn't been a doctor, you would have made a great chambermaid. And then Hawkeye talks about that he worked his way through pre-med to, you know, working in a hotel. And for some reason, I always heard that line where he says, helping my way through pre-med as help my wife through pre-med. I don't know why and it always confused me as a kid because I was like, wait a minute, was Hawkeye married before? Like, didn't make any sense. And then later, of course, we get the episode later on in the season where we meet Carly Breslin. And even though they were never married, I always, my weird like kid brain pushed that together. Like that was his wife or something. And I was like, boy, he's just really casually mentioning a wife that I've never known, never knew that we had. Again, I don't know why kids think like that sometimes. I don't know why I couldn't reason out that he was saying, help my way through pre-med. That's a much more, of course, that's what he said. And when you see it in the subtitles, you go, yeah, of course. But I don't know. At 11 years old, I wasn't that bright, I guess.
Well, yeah, as a kid, you know, you just hear things. And that's the thing about being a kid. Like, there's so much you don't understand that you don't really pick up on everything you don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just again. When I watch it now, I'm like ashamed at my younger self of like, what was the matter with me? Like, why did I couldn't figure that out? Help my way through med school. That's what he's talking about. So,
Rob, please forgive yourself for that. Don't hold on to that.
I'll try.
You're speaking to Sydney now. Let it go.
Thank you, Sydney. So it's only been 40 years I've been hanging on. So then Frank arrives and he's got the Purple Heart and he's wearing it because Margaret pins it on him. And as you pointed out, BJ immediately flags it and he's like, that's a Purple Heart. And Burns tries to just sort of act like, oh, it's nonchalant. It's my citation. And it's a Purple Heart. And you were never wounded. I most certainly was during the sniper attack. I got a shell fragment, and I love then immediately Hawkeye goes into outrage machine where he's like, hold the phone, Central. I'm the one who treated the guy. That was an eggshell fragment. And then I love that. And then BJ follows up with, you were cracking a boiled egg and got nervous, which is a great. I could totally see Frank doing that.
Yes.
The amount of disgust these two show to him is marvelous. And yes, I mean, it's just, they absolutely refuse to hear about it. In fact, they even corner him in the tent, which is cool. I like the sort of mise-en-scene of this, is that Frank is literally backed into a corner in the tent as Hawkeye and BJ sort of really lean in on him and stuff. And I think that's a great moment. And we're going to get to it. Features my favorite line of the episode. We'll get to that a little later. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then that whole scene is interrupted by the kids arriving. And again, why would you even have your Purple Heart on your scrubs? You're going to take your scrubs off anyway.
Oh, he just couldn't wait to show it off. Like, the second he got it, she pins it on him.
Yeah. Oh, God. So then we meet all the kids, and they are this adorable collection of Korean kids, and they're all of various ages. They're generally all little kids. We meet Meg Craddy for the second time, Nurse Craddy. In the first episode, she was played by a different actress. Here, she is played by, as I mentioned, Ann Doran. She died in 2000. She was in films like Rebel Without a Cause, The Desperate Hours, which is one of my favorite movies, It, The Terror from Beyond Space. And she was on TV shows like Ironside, Highway to Heaven, and Trapper John, M.D. And in fact, in this scene, we even get a mention of Trapper John, where, of course, Meg Craddy has not met BJ we'll get into it in a second. She's met Potter. But she hasn't met BJ, but we get the line of Hawkeye where he says, this is BJ Honeycutt. Trapper John's gone stateside. And then she says, my condolences to both of you, which is a nice little moment there. But yeah, here she's played by a different actress, except playing Meg Craddy. I like the little bit of continuity that it's the same person that we met before. Now, she immediately knows Colonel Potter. Now, over on IMDb, people are saying, oh, that's a mistake because she couldn't have met Colonel Potter. But it's not a mistake. Colonel Potter's been in the war for a long time. Presumably, he has met Meg Craddy at some other point not related to the 477.
And I was wondering when he talks about her, does he say you look well or you still look good?
Yeah.
I was wondering about that. And it was just a mistake, but that does make sense.
Yeah. She's his age. So it's possible that she was involved in some way in World War II even, and he knows about her. So, yeah, I figured that it's another installment of the Young Sherman Potter Chronicles, the show that never got made that I always wanted to see, because obviously he's got a whole life before he ever got to the 477. And we get little bits and pieces of it, which I like very much. I think that's a nice detail that they know each other already. And so she mentions that there's another young girl that they drop down the road. And this is all the different members of the 477 meet the kids. And it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you got this read from this, Sean. Some of the interactions with the kids, with the actors, don't feel written. They feel little – I'm sure they were. Like, I'm sure the interaction with Klinger where the kid is going, mama-san, you know, because he thinks Klinger's a woman. But some of the ways that they just – it seems like they just – point the camera at the kids and let them be kids and let the actors interact with them. There's something very unforced about it. There's the bit where Hawkeye is making the one kid do the thing with the tongue depressor, and the kid's making his tongue into the little U shape, and Hawkeye's trying to do it. We see Father Mulcahy cleaning the dirt off of one of the kids' faces. Radar's playing with the one kid. It feels real. It feels like they just let the kids be kids. And, the actors are just going to react.
They've said, I guess you've probably said this, that the writers have said, like, that there wasn't ad-libbing on MASH. You know, they stuck to the script. But things like this, you know, maybe in the script it says the cast interacts with the kids.
Right.
You know, and they shot, whatever, an hour or two of that and just pieced together, you know, really nice moments. And, yeah, I'm agreeing with you on that.
Yeah, it looks very almost like a handheld camera too.
Yeah,
One of the other details of this episode that I like, which I think is a continually charming thing, is that Margaret loves kids. She genuinely loves kids, and that is one of the big sticking points between her and Burns. Even though Burns has kids, but he's rotten to these kids. But Margaret's carrying one of them around. She's smiling. I mean, she really genuinely loves little kids. And I think that's a nice thing for them. And it's, again, you could tell that this was – they had layered that in way back in like season one and two. You could see the divide between Margaret and Frank is only going to get bigger and bigger as we go on. And Frank is really said the bad guy in this episode. But it's really charming watching Loretta Swit cart these little kids around. So he's examining one of the kids. He meets a teen kid who he's referred to as Sticky Boy because the kid, he's really tall and thin. That actor is named Mitchell Sakamoto. This is his last credit. The only other credit he had were a couple episodes of The Courtship of Eddie's Father. And that's it. That's all the information we have on him on IMDb. So I don't know, we gave up acting or something. There's a great bit where he's doing the Double or Nothing Joe thing with Frank, and Margaret's like, Frank, stick a crowbar in your wallet and give the boy two bits. And they do the heads or tails thing. Frank loses and then accuses him of cheating. And I love Margaret's, how did he cheat? Like, she's laughing at him, and he's like, oh, they have their ways. And he's just like, oh, like, you're talking about Larry Linville. That had to be tough for him to play that, especially in an episode like this where he's just such a dick.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, it's just like, oh, man. You know, nobody wants to – even though it's acting, you don't want to feel like you're the odd man out. And it's just like, oh, it's unfortunate. So right after that, there's a moment where we see Potter examining this very adorable little boy. And he says, how did he lose his leg? And Meg Craddy says, they pick up the shells to sell for brass. Sometimes they get a live one. And there is this slow push-in on BJ, who is standing behind that kid, and he's examining another kid. And it's a great moment for BJ as Alan Alda pulls in on Mike Farrell's face. And we just get the reaction as he hears this horror that a kid could lose his leg over this. And then he just does that. And he just goes, God. And it's a great moment. It's a great moment for BJ that this is a kid. This is a guy who has a baby daughter at home, as we know. And he is just horrified that this is the world he's in.
But what really, oh my God, for me, oh my God, I think I'm going to start crying. What makes it really important for me is he hears the story. Like you said, he does the, oh God. But then immediately he looks at the girl in front of him and smiles.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want her to see that look on his face, because kids will take their cues from you.
Right.
And he already knows it. Like, he's like, oh, I can't look exasperated. I can't look like this. Like, I have to look happy for her so she doesn't get upset.
Mm-hmm. It's a great, great bit. And again, it says, I mean, we all know Alan Alda by this point, Hawkeye is the star of this show.
Yeah,
he is the first among equals. It's an ensemble, but he's the main character. But I just think it says something about Alan Alda's relative lack of ego. I mean, anybody who's an actor, director, writer has an ego. There's no way you can. But it's
podcaster.
Or podcast. Fair enough, podcaster. Thank you, Sean. But
this is my last episode of MASHcast. Thank you, everybody.
That just undid all the good work you did earlier where you told me to get over my – thanks, Sean. All right, I'm back to square one. But anyway, seriously, Alan Alda, if he was more insecure about his role, he would give Hawkeye all these great moments. But he knows – We already know what Hawkeye's reaction is to all this because he's seen it before. BJ's the guy who's experiencing all this horror for the first time. Yeah. Even Potter's not. Potter's an old hand at this. So I love that moment. I just think – and it's – the filmmaking is great. I love that it's a slow push-in because when the scene starts, you've got Meg Craddy on the right and Potter on the left and this adorable kid in the center who's just sort of staring off. And that's what you're looking at are those three. And it's only as the camera slowly pushes in and goes over them that we realize, no, this scene is about BJ reacting to all this. So, yeah, it's just a really, really great moment. So then in the swamp, two of the kids are staying there, and they want to teach put the kids to sleep. So BJ tells this story about Androcles and the lion, which features a horrendous pun in the middle of it. Alan Alda lets this moment – breathe. I mean, they let him, they let Mike Farrell tell the whole story full on. And he does it like a dad would, where he does the line, he contorts his face and we see the kids are laughing. And there's even this great cut to Hawkeye watching BJ be a great dad. And again, it's another really wonderful moment for this character. It's just super.
I love that scene. Yeah, and like you said, like breathing, that's exactly the proper term for that. It's wonderful.
Yeah, he doesn't cut it. It's just he lets Mike Farrell just tell the whole story. So then we cut to Potter's tent where he is simultaneously entertaining two of the kids. And I'm jumping ahead. Meg Craddy comes in a little bit and talks about that there's an expectant mother coming. They give her some of their martinis. And then we see that two of the kids are sleeping in a box, basically, next to Radar. One of them steals his teddy bear, which will come into play later on. So then we get to Colonel Potter's tent, and he's got three kids in with him. I love that the kid in the back is wearing his cavalry. That's so adorable. It's so cute. And we find that he's reading them something to go to bed, and he's really reading them a manual about how to clean your rifle. And it's one of those things where, of course, these kids don't understand English, so they don't even know what he's saying anyway. But Harry Morgan, as Colonel Potter, delivers the most interesting performance of a field manual you're ever going to hear, because he's really dramatic. He's doing this dramatic, you know, if the assembling will wear and tear of parts will reduce the accuracy of the weapon. And then it's like, you know, see figure 57. And then he goes, oh, look, pictures and everything. Oh, my God. It's so adorable. He's just, again, we're like, what a great dad Colonel Potter must have been.
It's funny. It reminds me. Now, obviously, the scene was first, but it really reminds me of the scene in Three Men and a Baby when Tom Selleck, I think he's reading a Sports Illustrated, and I think it's about like a violent boxing.
Oh, really?
If I'm wrong, they'll notify me in the comments. But like he's reading like something about like this horrible fight where his eye had to be drained of all the blood. And one of the other men, I forget who, is like, what are you doing reading? And what are you doing reading that to her? And he's like, it doesn't matter what I say, as long as I'm saying it in a calm voice.
Yeah, it's really, really sweet. I absolutely love it. And again, Colonel Potter is not above letting kids stay in his tent. I mean, as commander, he could pull rank literally and say, you know, the kids are going to stay everywhere else. But now he takes three of them in himself, which is really adorable.
Oh, no. Well, oh my gosh. Well, I think now you'll correct me if I'm wrong. Like, definitely he's a father. At this point, do we know, is he a grandfather?
That's something else. Well, no, it's not been official. Of course, MASH would play fast and loose with how many grandchildren he's got. In fact, how many children he's got, because he mentions later that he's got other grandchildren. But then there's the later episode where he finds out he's a grandfather, and that seems to be the first time he's a grandfather. So, but as of now, we don't know that he's a grandfather.
Well, because I can tell you now, I'm super lucky because I've never been married and I never had kids, but my partner has been and does. So even though I've never had kids, I quote unquote have five grandkids.
Wow.
And oh my God. Well, and a sixth one on the way.
Oh my gosh.
And let me tell you, like, that feeling of being around kids is amazing. Just, you know, like, you open yourself up to them and, you know, they just like ask you everything. And I'm lucky because, you know, like they're into Star Wars and Marvel and DC. So like, you know, the other day, one of them asked me like my favorite Marvel hero. And I said, oh, Captain America. And he's like, mine too, but maybe Captain Marvel too. And just like you talk to them and they ask everything. So, I mean, in my mind, already has grandkids and he's missing grandkids, and being around these kids reminds him of his grandkids. And if I'm wrong, I don't want to be right.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. It would make sense at his point in his life that he would be a grandfather.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really marvelous scene. We're out on the compound and Radar is taking one of the kids to the latrine. He runs into Klinger, and that's where they hear some noise. And we see the teenage girl that Meg Craddy mentioned earlier, and she stumbles into the camera. She's pregnant, and we see that she's been shot. Mm-hmm. And then she collapses, and the act break ends with Radar holding the kid, just screaming for help. And then it fades in. The actress playing the wounded teen mom is Hunani Min. This is her second of three MASHes. She played the pregnant Korean girl in The Trial of Henry Blake. She's the one that Meg Craddy brings and says, this is an example of Henry Blake's work. Yes. It's the same actress. She would have a darker turn in season 8, where she would play the North Korean assassin in the Gorilla My Dreams episode. This is her three appearances. She appeared on other TV shows like China Beach and Tour of Duty, which has got to be one of the few actors that has the trifecta of being on MASH, China Beach, and Tour of Duty. She must have been pretty good with the Bruce Timm contingent, because she played parts on Superman the Animated Series and Batman the Animated Series, ooh, as well as Superpowers Galactic Guardians.
She's
got a lot of nerd credits. I mean, she didn't play notable characters, but nevertheless, she was on all of those shows. So, good for her. She's still acting. She has relatively recent credits.
Wow, that's like a Rob Kelly dream lineup.
She's all over the place there. So we come back from the act break, and we see that they, of course, have piled a lot of kids into the OR, into the O Club. One of the kids plays piano. Klinger tells her she's got to quiet down. There's this great moment where the one little kid keeps calling him Klinger, Mama-san, Mama-san. And he's like, no, Corporal Klinger, Mama-san. And then he finally just opens his robe, and he goes, see, no McGuffies. My mother used to refer to breasts as McGuffies from this episode.
Okay. I've never heard that term at all for breasts.
She saw this episode, and she always thought that was a polite way of referring to breasts when she was talking to me or some other kid. So Klinger tells the young girl not to play the piano, and she goes back to bed. And then, of course, the minute he leaves, she gets up and sits and starts playing some pretty good piano. She obviously is quite well trained. And I'm kind of curious about how TV shows get produced, because you wonder, when they were casting for that kid, did they look for a Korean, or at the very least, a Chinese kid that could play, and that was the prerequisite? Because the kid doesn't have any lines. All she ever does is play. Or did they hire that kid and on her special skills, it was like, plays the piano. And they were like, oh, we can get her to play the piano. I wonder what was like the chicken or the egg here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it could go either way.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a cute moment that you're like, wow, how did this kid learn how to play the piano? So then we're in the OR, and we're talking about that the teenage mom is going to deliver the baby. There's a weird motion. I wonder if you noticed this, Sean, when we see Hawkeye and Potter come in to the OR, and BJ and Margaret and Meg Craddy are already around the patient. Potter waves his hand at something. I don't know what he's doing. He seems like it's like the gesture you would make if you're like moving a fly from your face. I can't figure out what he's doing. I watched the scene 3 or 4 times, and it's like I first thought, is he telling Hawkeye to be quiet? But no, that's not what he's doing. And it's an odd thing. You just see Colonel Potter come in, and he just goes, not that you can say it, but he's waving his hand, and I just don't know what he's doing. I don't know why he's waving his hand.
Oh, I didn't notice that at all.
Yeah, it goes by very, very quickly, but it's just a strange little detail. So then they talk about who's going to deliver the kid. Hawkeye says, I haven't delivered a kid since I took my nephew to what I think what the line is. He says, I took my nephew to school. And I haven't delivered a kid since I drove my nephew over to his grandmother's. Well, Hawkeye just delivered a baby last season. In the Love and Marriage episode, we saw him deliver the baby. What's he talking about?
It's tough in that writer's room to remember everything.
I guess so. Without Google, without a Excel spreadsheet to keep this stuff stuff coordinated. But yeah, I was like, Hawkeye, what are you talking about? So anyway, of course, they talk about BJ is just fresh out of residency and stones throw away. So they decide, okay, he's going to obviously deliver the baby. There's another scene in the mess tent where this is Frank almost at his worst, where he is talking about that he goes on this rant about why do these kids steal? Stealing isn't even considered a crime in this godforsaken country. And he's like, if these kids had any gumption, there's no reason for being poor. If they had any gumption, they'd be out looking for a job instead of scrounging around in our garbage cans for food. And I like initially that Radar tries to put up an argument where he says, they're poor, Major. They're stealing to survive. Mm-hmm. And Burns just continues on. And then Radar just gives up and he just sighs and goes, yes, sir, and walks out of the tent. And I like that. I like that he just sort of is like, all right, this guy is hopeless. And even Frank seems to realize that maybe he's gone too far, because he says to no one in particular, where are the rest of the children? And he sounds genuinely worried. So Frank is having a brief moment of self-actualization there.
I wish it would last.
It never lasts, unfortunately. So we're back in the OR. There's another marvelous moment where they talk about that the Potter asks one of the nurses to, let's get some of the blood off the floor. And Hawkeye goes, what's wrong with wall-to-wall blood, Colonel? And you just hear Potter go, steady, Hawkeye, which I love. That's great. Like, he's such a great commander, and he does it in such a minimal way. It's like, all right, Hawkeye, I hear you, steady. I love that moment.
And I like it because it's such a great balance, because at the very beginning of the episode, Hawkeye is coming up with these one-liners, and Potter is like very like genuinely laughing at them.
Yep.
But I think this is really nice because it has balance. It's like, you know, yes, I do think you're funny, you're great, but come on, now's the time. Now's not the time. And then in just like a line or two, I think he laughs again.
Yep.
But I do like that balance for Potter.
Yeah. And he doesn't do it in a mean way. He just steady, Hawkeye. Like, okay, I hear you, but let's rein it in a little. I think this is marvelous. I do have to wonder, though, who is operating at that fourth table? There's a table behind Potter, and we see several people in scrubs leaning over, presumably a patient. Who is that? Because we've already established that Burns is not in the OR, and we know that BJ is, if we're kind of sitting at our television and we're looking at the OR like it's a stage, we know that BJ is on the right, Hawkeye's in the middle, Potter is to the left of Hawkeye, and then there's a table behind Potter. And who's is that, George? Who's the Spearchucker still there? Who's operating on that other table there?
Well, it was just announced, 20th Century Fox is Disney and Disney Plus. So Disney Plus is starting a new streaming show called Midmash, which is about the people you don't see. It's an 8-episode series starting next year.
I am very excited. You're breaking news here, Sean. I am very excited to hear that. Now that WandaVision is ending, I'll be able to have that to watch. As much as I don't want MASH to ever be touched, I would be perfectly happy if Disney decided to do that, because they own MASH now, so why not do it? So, that'd be marvelous. So Burns shows up and he's crowing about, I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead. Radar has the nice moment with the kid, one of the kids, where he's trying to get her to sleep, and he sings this little song about Daddy going to war, but Daddy still loves you. And again, Hawkeye. Alan Alda lets the moment breathe. He lets Gary Berghoff sing the whole song, and it's just a close-up on him as he puts the kid to rest. Again, for a frenetic episode, I like we have these moments where it's just we just calm it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Then, as I just said, Burns comes in. He demands to know where the kids are. And, of course, Potter realizes, well, geez, Burns, we need you in here. What are you doing? You know, we got wounded. And he commandeers Father Mulcahy. He says, get Major Burns ready. And I love how rough he is with Frank.
Yes.
He smashes him through the door. They almost bump into Radar, and he yells, hey, he wrestles his coat off of him, which is even one point even have Burns saying, you're hurting my arm, Father, which is great. And we get this is a brief moment where we actually hear Father Mulcahy refer to Burns as Frank. This is tough times for all of us, Frank. I can't think of another moment where he called Burns by his first name.
Well, I did have a question about this. So, like, obviously I've watched MASH for years. In syndication, I've watched it out of order. now when I rewatch it on my DVDs, I watch it in order. But I'm not an expert like you, and I don't want to put you on the spot. When Father Mulcahy started to rough handle Burns, I was thinking like, wow, he's so rough. And then I'm thinking, oh, no, no, that's right. He was in boxing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're at the sink, he talks about being involved in boxing.
Yep.
Is this the first reference to that? Do you remember? Do you know?
In previous seasons, seasons 2 and 3, we saw him with a bop bag.
Okay, and boxing gloves.
I think this is the first time where he expressly talks about that he was in. He says he was in Willie Pep's stable. Willie Pep was a boxer. But previously we had seen him with a bop bag. In fact, there's one point where he's punching it and then he stops and he does like a cross on the bag and then he starts hitting it again. So they had layered that in, that he at least was at this point an aficionado of boxing. Maybe he didn't do it himself, but at least he knew how to do it, was you know, appreciated the sport. So yeah, this was developing something they'd already put in previous seasons.
And so, it did make me think, now I'm horrible at religions, but when Father Mulcahy is washing Burns' hands, it reminds me, isn't there like a religious thing where like the priest washes people's feet? Like,
yes.
Is that for Easter? I don't know. Is that right? Whatever.
I believe so. Yeah. Mulcahy even mentions that too. He even talks about that in previous episodes where he comments on that. So yes, that is. And I like that Burns says, that's a nice job, Father. Nice and soapy. He gets all into it. He gets caught up in it. We hear the baby get delivered and we see everybody lower their heads. And he crosses himself and he has another line that doesn't really stick with any continuity, where he notices Klinger is praying and he says, Klinger, I thought you were an atheist. And he says, I gave it up for Lent. What are they talking about? We always saw in previous episodes that Klinger was like the only one that ever attended Mulcahy's sermons on Sunday. What are they? Where is it came from that he's an atheist? I'm always like, didn't Jamie Farr remember where he was like, guys, or maybe he was just happy to have the line, but
a good line. Yeah.
Oh,
and again, not to put you on the spot. So we know Alan Alda directed. Who wrote this? Do you have it right now?
Jim Fritzell and Everett Greenbaum.
And have they written other episodes, past episodes?
They wrote season 3 episodes and they wrote a lot of season 4. They really came near the end of season 3 and then took over here. So yeah, they probably, but I mean, Larry Gelbart was here and Gene Reynolds was here. I mean, you had the staff. You would think that someone would have said, geez, we went out of our way to show that Klinger was only the only one that ever showed up at Father Mulcahy's sermons. He's not an atheist, but okay. Again, when you're an actor, you know, you're just happy for the line, I guess. So BJ talks about the baby's been delivered, and it's been delivered with a nick in its hindquarters from a bullet, which is horrendous. You know, I mean, it sounds sort of cute in its own weird way, but it's awful. The poor thing was almost shot, for God's sakes. And then Radar has this wonderful reaction. He's like, wow. Klinger comes in and he tells Nurse Crady that he's going to donate one of his coats to the baby. And he goes on and on about it. It's got a stunning fleur-de-lis with like this, he goes on and on and on about it. And Potter says to no one in particular, I got to get him that Section 8. It's a cute moment. Then in the swamp, Frank is looking for his purple heart. Margaret sees some little doodad sitting on the stove and wonders what it is, puts her eye up to it, and then she screams, sacrilege. It's disgusting. And he's like, what? It's a picture of General MacArthur in the nude. And Frank is not bothering to look at her. And of course, that means Margaret takes a second glance at it because she wants to look at MacArthur in the nude.
Well, no, wait a minute. When you said doodad, do you not know what that is?
I don't know the name of it. I don't know what the name. I remember those things from, but I don't. It's for people too young to remember. It's this little. It's a little like magnifying. Not a glass, but it's like a little magnifier, and you put your eye up to it, and inside was a picture. And generally, they were built for pornography. You would see like a nude woman or something. And in this version, they have a nude photo of General MacArthur. I don't know the name of the actual little piece of whatever it was.
Oh, now see, for me, so I'm 50, I'll be 53 years old. Like when I was a kid, I know these from the beach, the shore. Like when you would go to the beach, so we would go to Ocean City, Maryland, And when you were at the beach, they had photographers that would come around and they would take your picture and give you a number. And then, you know, I guess the next day or much, much, much later in the day, you would go up and buy these. And yeah, so it's like a little magnifier and it's a plastic case. And at the end of the plastic case is like a little, it's like a slide, but you put it up to your eye and you see like your beach picture.
Oh, okay.
So, and like, growing up, these were just, you know, this was part of going to the shore. You know, you would get your t-shirt with like the shiny decal on it. I mean, this was all throughout being a kid. Like every year you would have, yeah, and I don't know what they're called, but yeah, you would hold it up to your eye. So I almost thought it was, is it anachronistic? Like something that's, because it seemed so much part of the 70s that I couldn't imagine they had these things back in the war. But now hearing that it's based on pornography, I'm like, oh my gosh.
It may not be, I'm revealing something about my personal life that I shouldn't be, that I only know about it as a
what did you do to get through medical school?
I don't know. I mean, I remembered seeing them as a kid and you would look and it would be like a naked lady. And it wasn't like hardcore pornography. It was a nude photo, exactly. It was that kind of thing. So that's how I remember it. I don't want to go down this road too far. I am curious as to, you know, clearly it's a, hopefully it's a doctored photo of MacArthur. Again, it leads into Margaret that she takes a second gander at it because of course she does.
Yeah.
There's another great line there where they go into the swamp and she says, she looks around at the filth and she's like, how do you live like this? And I love Byrne just goes, eh, he doesn't have time for this conversation right now. He's too busy looking for his purple heart. He can't find it. He's convinced that the Slicky Boy has stolen it. He has another demented line where he says, we should give this country back to the Indians. So, okay. He chases the kid around. He chases him into the showers. The kid pulls the I warn you, I've had two judo lessons. The kid pulls the shower rod, the shower chain on Frank, covers him with water. BJ stops him. And then he's telling him, BJ, you know, that kid stole my purple heart. He's like, no, he didn't. I'll show you where your purple heart is. And then we go into post-op and Potter is, I love that he says he's authorized by the President of the United States, Harry S. Truman, to award a purple heart to the child of, and he's Sung Lee. And he says, and it's a privilege to honor the little guy. And he pins his purple heart on the baby's blanket. And so the baby is just absolutely adorable.
Oh, yeah.
And and he said he gives the kid a purple, because of course the kid's been injured in the line of war. And so he gives the kid a purple heart. And Potter says, where'd you get this? And where'd you get this? And Margaret says, you know, I bet I know. And Hawkeye says, bite your tongue. There's this great, another little bit where I love that Potter, before he gets up to leave, talks to the young woman in Korean.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that he knows enough Korean to talk to her like that. I think that's good. That's just a great little bit. And then with the scene ends with a through shot of the window where BJ and Burns are looking at the Purple Heart. And, you know, Burns is like, well, I really would like one. I really would like to get one day. And BJ says, well, with any luck at all, which Burns does not get, of course.
He
doesn't understand the implication of that statement. And Hawkeye thanks. He says, don't worry about it. He says to Meg Crady, don't worry about it. It's lousy to get shot on your birthday. And he shares a nice little smile with Margaret, who obviously approves of what's been done here. And then the button scene for the episode, as I mentioned, for the Hey Doc episode, where that episode ends with the button scene is normally not connected to the main plot, but here they actually wrap up the episode in the button scene where Meg Crady departs. And it's a longer button scene than you typically get. It runs about 2 minutes, which is usually a little lot shorter than that. And we just watch all the various members of the 477th drop the kids off. Klinger, we see that Nurse Kelly is sitting there in the back of the truck kissing the kids and hugging them. And Mulcahy puts a surgeon's hat on one of the kids. I love Meg Crady's line about Hawkeye, if I were 40 years younger. And Hawkeye's like, I thought you were. Just very charming. And they all just say goodbye to her. And then the one little follow-up is just as they're about to leave, radar stops everything, and we see that one of the kids has absconded with his teddy bear. And he trades the teddy bear with his teddy bear for another teddy bear, and he makes sort of a bargain with the kid, which is really – BJ watches all this, which is really cute. They have this little – I like the kid puts up an argument a little bit in the beginning there. He kind of – and then he gives him a teddy bear, gives him like a doll, a stuffed doll, and he hugs the kid. And then Meg Craddy drives off, and Potter says, all right, that's it, everybody. Let's get back to work. And our episode ends with just everybody dispersing and going back to work, ending a very charming episode of MASH.
I'm so happy that at the end of the episode, everyone just walks away. Because I think especially with MASH, they very easily could have had radar shout out, choppers, and then everyone runs away. And I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, it's like a nice mellow, you know, okay, everybody, this was a chaotic 24 hours, so everybody is going to get a moment to relax a little. And we even see some of the actors, they look like they don't even know where they're going. Like some of them look, they just wander, which is nice, which is very charming. Klinger kind of just meanders into the out of the frame and everybody else. But yeah, it's a very sweet, low-key ending. Again, it's just the kids is just a marvelous episode. And it's so simple. Mm-hmm. The log line is a bunch of Korean refugees, orphans, arrive at the 477. That's it. That's the basic through line of this episode. But yet they managed to wring so many great moments out of it. It's just, again, a wonderfully charming episode.
Yeah, I don't want to say nothing happens, because you have – you know, her being shot and the birth. So, I mean, that's like your drama, your excitement. Yeah. But that doesn't, you know, that's not what the whole episode pivots around.
Yeah.
It is such just like a gentle, like nice episode other than that.
And features some great character beats for the established characters and for the new ones, which is all you can really ask for in something like this. So Sean, what is your favorite line or favorite joke from this episode?
It is funny because I do love this episode a lot, but in general, like, it's not a very like ha-ha funny one-liner episode, which they don't all have to be. And we did talk about this line a little bit earlier, and it's mostly just the way Loretta Swit hits one word where she says, stick a crowbar in your wallet and give it to him. Like the way she hits crowbar, oh my God, I love that.
She looks so annoyed at him. He's just like, oh my God, you know, come on, Frank. She kind of does it through gritted teeth too. Like, stuck a crowbar in your, he's just so frustrated with him. My favorite line is actually not a joke. Again, I think this is a very funny episode, but my favorite line is the scene where Hawkeye and BJ corner Frank for the Purple Heart. And then of course, Burns's scrubs are covered in blood and he grabs Burns by the scrub, and he says, Frank, you don't get medals for other people's blood. Yeah. And once again, Alan Alda lets that moment sit. There's no comment. Frank doesn't retort. BJ doesn't say anything. They just hold on it and they let that line float for like a one Mississippi, a two Mississippi, and then radar interrupts because the kids have arrived. And then they get distracted. But I like that they let that line just sit there for a moment, letting it sink in to Burns. That it's like, you know, you're taking credit. You're taking a medal for the blood that someone else has spilled. And it's an abomination. And you feel that even though Frank is stupid as all get out and cowardly, and of course he doesn't learn because he keeps looking for the Purple Heart afterward. In that moment, maybe that got through to him for a second. Again, it doesn't last. But it's pithy enough from Hawkeye that it lands, you know, it lands pretty well, at least for the audience, it lands pretty powerfully. So that's my favorite.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Said, it's just a marvelous show. I mean, it's the big episodes are great. The small episodes are great. The sort of intermediate ones where it's sort of one plot line throughout the whole episode are great. They said that just every episode of MASH this season is just such a total blast to talk about.
The one thing I did want to add, with the birth in this episode, it did make me think of, like, in the very final episode, my favorite scene from the final episode is where everyone talks about what they're going to do when they go home. And I remember the one nurse says that because she's seen so much death here,
when she
gets home, she wants to work in the maternity ward.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that's just so beautiful. And it, and obviously they're not connected, but seeing the birth here made me think of that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you know, there is so much death and gore and grime and MASH. And then you see like a baby's face.
Yeah.
It's a real change up. You're like, oh, this adorable little baby just cooing and looking happy. And you know, in his little blanket. Yeah. It's really dope. Yeah. I remember that line that the nurse says, I want to work in pediatrics. After all this, it would be nice to bring people into the world, which is a great moment. So yeah, we'll have to get to that. It's season 11. So, Sean, thank you once again. You know, I always enjoy talking to you. I'm always happy to have you back for MASH. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. I love it. So much fun.
Why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
You can find me on Facebook under Sean M. Myers. That's me. That's my personal account where I talk about comics and movies and Kylie Minogue and a whole bunch of fun stuff.
Not necessarily in that order.
Correct. I have a different Facebook page, which is just Sean Myers, where every day I post a Disney song lyric, and you have to tell me where it's from, the movie and the song. I'm on Twitter under Krypton Kylie, but I'm much more of a lurker on Twitter than I am a poster.
Fair enough. Well, okay. Thank you so much for coming by. This was a blast. Thanks everybody for listening. Of course, if you want to follow the show on Twitter, go to MASH477Cast. All the episodes are on the website, FireAndWaterPodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. And if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Dolph DeVries, Bridge Schramm, and Mike Thomas for their support of MASHcast. So that's going to do it. We will see you all next week. But until then, that is all.
My medal. You get another one, Frank. We're staying up nights making purple hearts.
Well, I really would like one.
Well, then you luck at all.